happy Friday to you, and welcome back to the Sheldon McLeod Show on News 95.7. A very special guest in our studio to talk with us about a fundraiser that will be benefiting the Africville Museum. And it's happening next weekend, a week from this weekend, November 16th. And in our studio, Juanita Peters. Juanita, welcome back. How are you?
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
Very excited, and this is a very exciting event, a celebration of Black composers bringing together top-notch talent all at the Halifax Seaport Market on Saturday, November 16th.
Yeah.
This, it says here, the first ever fundraiser for the museum?
The Africville Museum has never had a fundraiser. We've done a lot of things, but we've never actually had a fundraiser, and so this is it. And I have to tell you, right off the cuff, a lot of people have been seeing the posters around town, and we've been getting a lot of questions about them, because the event is called Celebrating Black Composers, and they see a picture of somebody who's not Black, and they're like, what's that all about? Anyway, so the picture is of Daniel Nukowski. He is an amazing pianist, a Carnegie Hall pianist, you know, of that caliber.
Right.
And he contacted me well over a year ago and, you know, told me about the love of this particular repertoire that he's doing. Mm-hmm. And that he received a grant to do some traveling around Canada. And he would be in Atlantic Canada this year, this fall. And he wanted to know if he could come play for us in Africville. And I was delighted. It's a gift. And the challenge then became, how do we do this? Because we can't get a grand piano in our museum without any really large difficulty. And because of the time of year, you certainly couldn't do anything outside. So I tell you, we are so blessed because the Port of Halifax agreed to give us the venue, the Seaport Farmers Market, for this event.
Nice.
Debut Atlantic paid for his fee and his travel and his accommodations. And he'll be there. He'll be playing some amazing selections, and we've scotioned it up a bit.
nice. So how is it scotioned up? How can we, you know?
Well, I don't want to give it all away, no, but certainly we have, we've already announced, of course, that Shante Grant will be there.
Yes.
An amazing poet. Yes. Former poet laureate, author, award-winning author, who most recently won the Coast's Best of for her book, Africville. So nice. How fitting is that?
Congratulations.
Which has also won many awards over the last year and a half in its short time on the shelves. And just an incredible individual as well. And has roots in Africville.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And a very new but extraordinary talent.
Zamani. Zamani, 18-year-old singer-songwriter from a musical family, it says.
Yeah, she is. And Zamani embodies a talent much older than her years on this earth. And she's a wonderful writer, songstress, and she'll be performing a wonderful jazz piece that I love hearing her do. With Daniel on next Saturday night. And and there's a few other surprises that we have in the works as well. So
stay tuned, as they
say. Stay tuned. And
This is a fundraiser. So obviously there's it's a ticketed event. So
that's
people
right.
need to purchase their tickets. How's that been going?
That's been going pretty good. Yeah. We're almost close to half sold. A week before the event. So for those of you who want to come, hurry up and get there, www.africvillemuseum.ca, or go to the Africville Events Facebook page or our website, and you'll find all the information there. But I want to say it's a very unique event in that people are going to think of this, you know, classical music. Do I want to go listen to classical music? Well, yes, you do.
So tell us why. I mean, this is a style of music that...
But it's a different, you know, Daniel, it's the way he presents that makes it so interesting. And he's a storyteller on the keys. And I think that if you've never been to a performance like this before, this is the way to be introduced to it. In a way that you'll feel that you're connected to the music in some way.
Juanita Peters is here with us. I guess in some ways people will look at classical music as a bit of elite, you know, it's for people, highbrow, you know, black tie affair, that kind of thing, that long gowns. So this is, how do you envision this, the atmosphere on this night, a week from Saturday?
I expect to see a combination of many things. I expect to see some music students come as they'd like, however they're comfortable. I expect to see some people come feeling like it is the kind of event that you want to get a little dressed up and celebrate at. We want people to come as they feel comfortable. Be yourself and enjoy the evening. And there's lots to do. There's going to be lots to do there. So
the event is a celebration of black composers. As you say, this man on the poster is Daniel Nukowski, and he's from New York, you say?
He's Polish-Canadian, but he travels. Yeah, he travels all over the world. And so we're very blessed to have him in our region and to have him sharing this. You know, again, when... I've worked in the music industry for quite some time as well, as a promoter, as a producer. The wonderful thing about music is when people are doing it because they can't not do it.
Right.
You just have to get there and share. I don't know if you've ever had a singer come up and want to sing something for you, and the first thing that goes through your mind is, oh dear. You know, and, you know, if you're surprised with something wonderful as my, you know, closest connection to classical music is a Nova Scotian, Halifax-born Claire Coolin, who is an extraordinary soprano singer who's now in Italy. You know, I knew her as a little girl, and she did that to me once. She said, you know, I have this song about this particular subject you're writing about, and I'd like to sing it to you. And I thought, oh, dear. And when Claire opened her mouth, it was like someone gave me an everlasting gift. Honestly, I've never forgotten it. Look her up if you get a chance, Claire Coolin. And of course, we all know Portia White. You know,
there
Portia White.
Quite a connection. I worked in Truro for a number of years. And I won't say she hasn't gotten the due she deserves, because she has, but she's probably more well-known outside of Nova Scotia in many ways.
That's right. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
And so Portia White is someone with a connection with, she grew up in Truro, is my understanding.
She was born in Truro.
Yeah.
Yeah. And later in her later years was living in Halifax.
And
yeah.
And she too performed in New York. And
all over the world.
All over the world.
All
yeah.
over the world. For the Queen. You know, Portia White had an extraordinary career. And then later, her end of career, she was teaching in Toronto. And I actually met a woman whose sister was one of her students in Toronto. And Portia White, the connection for me these days is that she is my other half's mother's stepsister.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do this.
Stepsister to, my other half's mom. And so, and she was one of the last living choir members of Portia's choir until she passed away 2 years ago.
There will be an element of her music presented? Is there a plan for that on this night?
No, there isn't.
It's all curated by this other
artist
that we spoke with.
Yes.
About.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a fundraiser. It's for the Africville Museum. If you haven't been to the museum, you need to.
Come see us.
Absolutely.
Come see us. We're growing. We've got lots of new things coming up. So come see us now. We've got a big tree lighting ceremony on December 8th at 5 p.m. And that's always fun. We pack them in and then the elders feed everybody a nice turkey soup afterwards and the kids can play. We got a lot going on over there. So come on over.
I don't want to be rude and ask if there's going to be food at the fundraising event, but I just did.
There's not.
So gas up before you go.
That's
or maybe
right.
Make plans afterwards.
It's later, so the doors open at 7:30. The concert starts at 8. So, yes.
We've tweeted out a link for folks who want to know more at the S. McLeod Show. And again, the Africville Museum, www.africvillemuseum.org. Easy enough to find. And you are on Facebook.
You got it.
Juanita Peters is here with us. And thank you so much for this. Good luck with the fundraising efforts. And I know it's going to be an amazing night for people who will be all coming together with one goal, which is to hear and be moved by this music.
Right on. Thank you so much.
All the best. We'll take a break and we'll be back with more of our show right after this. We're back here on this Friday afternoon waiting for the snow. Oh, the mad dash to get the old winter tires on. The winter snow slicks. The slicks. No, hopefully they're not slick. Hopefully they're ready for the weather, and hopefully you are too. Welcome back to the broadcast. Coming up after 1:30, we'll speak with a woman recently diagnosed with autism, now in the home stretch of her trek to cycle across Canada for Autism Speaks Canada. We'll talk to you about that. We'll hear from Ocean Lander, economics professor from Concordia. And right now, this is, an add-on to a conversation that was had yesterday. In some ways, money from the government, about $200,000 worth, was put into the Healthy Community Stream back in August, developed with input from community groups, municipal leaders, health professionals, and others. It's all about retention and recruitment of doctors. And this one that we're discussing now is a $20,050 grant for the community of Lunenburg County. And on the line with us this afternoon, Tina Henniger from Now Lunenburg County. Hi, Tina. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. How are you?
Doing okay. It was a big day yesterday, this announcement of the money.
It certainly was, yes. We're very happy to have been given this money and this opportunity to create something that we feel will be really valuable in our attempt to draw people and attract them to our community to practice.
And Tina Henniger is Population Growth Coordinator, Now Lunenburg County. I know we spoke about the cross-Canada trip. So for listeners who don't know about Now Lunenburg County, can you give us a bit of a primer?
Sure thing. So Now Lunenburg County started after the IBMI report, when community leaders and business owners read the IBMI report and thought, okay, well, how are we going to deal with some of what was unearthed in that report? And so they started meeting and engaging with the community and ultimately decided that, you know, we really need more people in our community, more taxpayers, more kids in our schools, more employees for our businesses. And so I was hired in 2016 and tasked with trying to grow the population. And so no problem. Easy peasy, right? So we went on a cross-Canada tour to just inform people about our community and share how they could create a life in Lunenburg County and just help them see and be inspired by our community. So we got great, we met tons and tons of people, hundreds of thousands of people in on that tour. And actually, we were successful in bringing some people to our community who were thinking about Nova Scotia and not really sure of where what they might do and where they might live. So it was a great initiative. But what we did learn from that tour was that we really needed that in order to attract people to our community, we needed to ensure that they would have access to a family doctor and that they would have access to adequate internet. And so that kind of informed our next projects. And so I have been working with the community and with our recruiter for NSHA. I do the community welcome, which is critical in order to help physicians see their life here. So, you know, we may tour the community. I may take them to, you know, for coffee or to the Lunenburg County Lifestyle Center, show them our swimming pool and our library, and show them what their life might look like. And it's really not just about the physician. It's about their spouse. It's about their children. It's about their whole family unit. So I may, you know, expose them to what hockey team they might play on, or the dance group, or, you know, this is a book club that your spouse might belong to. So that's basically what I've been doing. And this particular grant will be amazing because what I'm doing is I'm answering a lot of the same questions when I meet with medical students or if I meet with families who are looking at practicing here. And so we basically created this, or we are in the process of creating, and we're writing it right now, this six-part, which will house it on our website, which will allow people to, we'll be able to correspond with them in real time. And it won't just be myself. It will be people within the community who will be helping to answer some of those questions, some of those questions that I simply cannot answer. So, for example, when I'm talking to a physician in another part of the country or even the world, if they have questions about practicing here There's no one better to answer that question than a local physician. So I can help them see their life here from a community perspective, but the physician who will be on the webinar with me will be able to answer their questions in terms of practicing here.
Right. This is Tina Henniger on the line with us, Population Growth Coordinator for Now Lunenburg County. As you say, it's not a lot of money. It's not a huge investment, but it's something. And as you say, it's going to answer some of those common questions or the frequently asked questions, as the internet would label it. So where are you at? You're still in the development of or writing of the scripts for these videos?
Yeah. Well, we just got noticed that we actually got the grant, and without that, we would never be able to do this. So the $20,000 that we've gotten from the Community Culture and Heritage Grant, we will put that together with some in-kind donations that we've gotten from the community as well as private sector sponsorships. So we know it's going to cost more than $20,000 to create something like this, but we have, the community has been really supportive of our work. We know that it's not just a provincial issue, that municipalities have to step up as well, just as other municipalities are throughout the province. So this is going to be a community effort, and right now we are, like I said, writing it. We are right now working with some local videographer who we've worked on other projects together, and we work really well together. It's also, the money will be used to do some branding and some marketing just to make sure that it has a look, a consistent look and feel. We want to make sure that we're creating this thing. We want to make sure that we get some people who are actually seeing it. So one of the ways that we hope to do that is we're going on another tour in April. We're going to be, we know that it was so quirky and fun when we did it the last time, and it did get a lot of media attention. So we're going to go to a doctor recruitment event in Ottawa, and so one of the things that we want to share with these people that we meet at this event is, you know, we're going to ask them to sign up for our webinar so then they can learn more about living in our community.
Tina Henniger is here. There is competition right across the country. Doctor shortage, you can just Google search that, and you can just pretty much, you know, put in any community name and you're going to find out that it's a challenge. So with that in mind, I find that there's this, a few years ago, there was this tendency to try to offer extras, offer, you know, an incentive or money. But then you get into a bidding war with your neighbors, and that doesn't seem to be very helpful overall. And I'm wondering, how will you measure the success of this? Will it, you know, will you be able to say we have these doctors moving in because of it?
Yeah, I mean, I agree that, you know, you can give in all of these incentives, and then what happens when the term runs out? Do they go to the next community? And I really think that in talking to some of the doctors who we are so lucky who've moved here from other places and who are practicing right here, we've talked to them about, you know, why did they choose here? What was the deciding factor? And a lot of it came down to lifestyle and what we can offer. So let's use that as our competitive advantage. We have something really special here. Not just our, you know, our beauty can be found in any other province that you go to. Canada is a beautiful country. So we are a beautiful place to live, but really our people are pretty special. So let's market the neighbors that we have in our community. Let's talk about the lifestyle that we offer. That's really what is the competitive advantage of living here. So I think that in measuring the success, will be once we do, we know that we have already seen some success in helping a local physician, for example, who was moving to this community and he was really struggling to find housing. You know, housing in our community, for finding rentals, for example, was a challenge. They're not listed in the newspaper or on Kijiji anymore. They don't even have to be listed. So me being here, boots on the ground, I literally drove around the community and I looked at, I found a sign that said for rent, and I took a picture of it and I sent it to the physician who at that time was in Ontario, And I did video walkthroughs of five different housing options for him. And that's really essentially what brought him here. He signed a lease without even seeing the apartment based on my recommendation that it was a great place to live. And, you know, those are going to be the things that, that people are going to need. They're going to need someone who is kind of helping and guiding them. And up until us doing this work, there really wasn't that wasn't happening. I mean, we were doing, I believe, our recruiter is doing a great job of doing what she can to bring doctors here, but there, we need to make sure that we have, we're able to offer the lifestyle piece, the community piece, help them find a nanny if they need one for their children, help them, you know, get in daycare or help their spouse get employment. So that's a really important piece. And up until this grant being offered, there was really no support for community groups like ours to do this. So we've been really, we've done a lot of work of advocating for having a pot of money. Now, we could talk all day about, you know.
And unfortunately, we're almost out of time. But just on that last thought, I mean, people are, you know, moving to the community because they love it and people are staying. It's a huge accomplishment. And this is another step towards making it an even better part of the province. Tina Henniger.
Well, I appreciate you wanting to talk about it. Thank you so much.
All right. Tina Henniger, thank you very kindly. She is the Population Growth Coordinator with Now Lunenburg County. We'll take a break back in just a few minutes after this news update to talk about cycling across Canada, right after this. Friday afternoon into our second hour together. Thank you for tuning us in. The Sheldon McLeod Show, News 95.7, Matt Brand, our producer. We're going to be hearing from Moshe Lander in a few moments. He's just in the midst of another interview with another media outlet, so it'll work out perfectly. He'll be ready for us in about 10, 12 minutes or so. Ken Hines from the Army Museum will tell us what's happening there this weekend and on Remembrance Day Monday. We'll also tell you more about the folks involved with the Royal Canadian Regiment Trust, the Afghanistan War Memorial. There's an event coming up, and we'll be we're very pleased to be speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Eleanor Taylor, retired. We'll speak with Lieutenant Colonel Taylor coming up after the 2 o'clock news. And the folks from Angus Reid did a survey recently, venerating our veterans. 4 and 5 say Canada should do more to honor those who served. That's all to come. Kim the Beer Dude this afternoon in for Todd. And well, right now, this is a journey, an adventure that started back in July. But in fact, I believe, based on what I was able to glean from an article I read recently, this is about a woman who was late in life diagnosed with autism. And on the line with us is Catherine Gloyou. I believe I've reached her here this afternoon. Catherine, thank you very much for joining us.
Yes, hi, Sheldon. Thanks for having me on your show.
You were back in July starting this mission. Where did it begin?
Actually, I started on July 29th at the mile zero of the Trans-Canada Highway. So that's located in Victoria, on the Vancouver Island in BC.
And here you are just days away from completing this journey. Where have we reached you right now, Catherine?
Right now, I'm on Highway 2 just out of Truro. So I'm heading south towards Halifax then.
And you'll be wrapping up this journey in just a matter of hours.
Actually, I'm planning to complete it on Monday. So I'm looking forward to finishing on Crystal Crescent Beach, and so just a bit south of Halifax. And yes, there's some storm, some snow on the forecast. So I'm going to have to deal with this during the next few days.
Dr. Catherine Gloyou is our guest here on the show. Tell us why you wanted to cycle across Canada.
Oh, there are many questions, and there are many reasons, actually. Basically, there are two. One is like the sporting challenge. I love cycling. I'm always moving, either hiking or skiing or mountaineering. So for me, like, sporting challenges are always like a big source of joy and of reward. So that was one part. And then the second part, I was diagnosed 2 years ago with autism, and it's been quite an interesting journey to familiarize myself with this diagnosis and learn how to live with it. And during this journey, I mean, it was, in my opinion, like, it became something that I think is worth like talking more about. So I decided to use my bike and this journey as a vector or as a voice, like to spread the message about autism, increase awareness, tell people what it is, and show another face of someone on the spectrum. Because usually, you know, we think about autism like some people will say, oh, yes, the movie Rain Man, or there's some kind of images like associated with it. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, oh, I'll present another face.
Catherine Glow-Yu is our guest on the show as she's just about ready to complete a journey across this country. Thousands of kilometers and varying terrain and all kinds of weather. Did you do this all by yourself, Catherine?
Yes, actually, until 5 days ago, it was a solo, unassisted journey. So I've been camping and just being, alone on the road. With support from my friends and family by phone and email, but yes, I've been alone. But for the last leg of the journey, my father has taken the train to Moncton, and he's now acting like a support crew and support vehicle because, you know, it's very cold. I could use a hand. So I'm so proud that and so happy that my dad is here to help me for these last kilometers.
What did your family and friends say when you said, no, I want to bicycle across Canada by myself?
Oh, actually, that's a good question. Well, they didn't say much because that's kind of the kind of ideas that I'll come up with, like, oh, I'm going to climb this mountain in Bolivia, or, oh, I'm going to do this or do that. So, yeah, my mom, when I say, oh, perhaps I have a good idea, like right now, she's going to just sit down before she hears the idea.
It sounds like you have a great deal of support and love within your family and friends, and it's wonderful to hear. And as you say, this is to bring awareness to the issue, but you're also raising money for Autism Awareness Canada?
Yes, actually, when I started this journey, it was kind of unplanned. You know, I had no Facebook page. I had really no idea what I was doing because planning when you're autistic, it's really not one of my forte. So I just started riding along, and then, I had a sign behind my bike, and people started to ask me questions like, oh, what is it? And then I thought like, oh, well, I should reach out to someone, you know, to raise money. And then, I knew Autism Speaks Canada because they organize like lots of charity walks around the country. Mm-hmm. So I just sent them an email, and yeah, they're started the partnership. So yeah, this has been awesome.
We've got our guest, Dr. Catherine Glow-Yu, here with us, and just outside of Truro, as she gets set to complete a cross Canada journey, raising awareness and money for Autism Speaks Canada. I've had guests in my studio who say, you know, I am autistic, and this is how it presents. Catherine, I don't know if I've met someone who was diagnosed late in life, such as yourself, and I'm wondering what that's been like for you on this journey.
You mean the diagnosis?
Yes,
the pre-diagnosis?
Yeah, just how it's changed or affected the way you perceive yourself or others see you.
Actually, it's going to sound funny, but I've heard a lot of that from other people diagnosed. It is actually a relief to know and to understand because, I'm quite functional, you know, like autism will show like when I'm stressed or tired or overwhelmed, but basically I'm quite functional. So like there has always been like odd stuff that I was doing or things like ever since I was a kid, but not enough so that people would say like, oh, maybe she should get evaluated. But you know, like, you get to the point where you say like, oh, I'm just weird. I'm a marginal. I don't fit into society. I don't know why. I know there's something like different about me, but I don't know what it is. It doesn't have a name. But then when you hear this is it, it's like, oh, I understand now why I'm this way. And it's not because I'm weird. It's not because I'm, you know, it's really helping in understanding what it is. And then finding ways to deal better with it afterwards.
We, as mentioned, and as you said, you will be wrapping this up on Monday. Have you decided on your next adventure yet?
Oh, I'm thinking about it. Actually, I was thinking about it yesterday, and I was thinking, oh, maybe I should settle like from England to China, or I've had this this project of climbing like all 6,000 meters mountains in Bolivia. I've climbed many of them already, but I would like to do them all. There's always like some kind of marathon or triathlon plan. I have tons of projects all the time.
It sounds like it. And I want to wish you well. I know it's been, I could ask you all kinds of questions about the adventure and the travel that you just had across this country. Any perhaps thoughts about writing down what this adventure was like for you? I don't know, a book or a blog of some sort?
Yes, actually, well, I have a Facebook page, which I update every day with whatever happened during the day. And that's an interesting question you're asking, because actually, I spent last winter writing a book about what it is to be on the spectrum, you know, and some of my mountaineering adventures and this and that. And actually, this bike journey is kind of the last part of the book. And So yes, it's that's what I'm going to be working on after finishing this trip. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to having it published.
We've tweeted out a link to that Facebook page. And I want to thank you again, Catherine, for joining us on the show and sharing with us what you've been doing to raise awareness and money for Autism Speaks Canada. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Sheldon. And I'm going to be very happy when I see the Halifax sign, because it's going to mean something to me.
I'm sure people will wave and welcome you warmly. Thank you so much.
And, oh, that's cool. Thank you so much for your time.
All right, Catherine. Take care. Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye.
Dr. Catherine Glouyou, cycling across Canada. I don't know how many kilometers or miles that is. A lot. I'm not a... I don't think I would do that.
I wouldn't even want to drive that in a car.
Well, I yeah.
Well, I would, but I'd complain a lot.
That would be, I'm sure. And I remember we had a chance to chat with some people who were cycling across the United States, and, you know, saddle sores and all that go along with hundreds of kilometers per day just to get where you're going. Ugh. Well, good for her, though. Glad to hear that it's been a success and it's been a challenge, and challenging herself, and she's adventuresome, of course.
That sounds like
without,
it.
Goes yeah. without saying. Yeah.
I guess. Climbing mountains.
And cycling across the country.
Word of the day? What? Saddle sores.
Is it two words or one?
We'll make it a combined word.
It's a compound
compounder.
Word. Yeah. All right. Moshe Lender, economics professor, Concordia and Dalhousie. He should be finished his interview with Calgary. We'll get him on the line right after this. Well, we asked yesterday if having a winter classic would in some ways change your mind about whether or not there should be a taxpayer-funded stadium in Halifax. Big uptake, 77% no, 23% yes. Even a suggestion that it was going to be Montreal and Toronto. Could you get a bigger matchup here in Halifax? Probably not. Moshe Lender is on the line with us this afternoon. And, well, as we asked this rhetorical question, has the carrot been gilded with this outdoor classic? Welcome back to the show, Moshe Lender. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Thank you.
Traveling through security?
I got through security. I'm now just heading to the gate.
So, all right.
Perfect timing.
Awesome. Were you surprised at all with this recent, perhaps, carrot?
Surprised, yeah. This is not the thing to try and induce a stadium. You don't say, I might apply for a Heritage Classic game. That's not the solution. And that's not even saying that you're going to get a Heritage Classic game. So, I mean, just what a mess. That he continues to make in trying to secure the stadium.
You know, back when this whole story started to break, some folks were looking at Anthony LeBlanc's history. And I was reading an article on Halifax Examiner, Anthony LeBlanc's history of playing hardball with governments in order to get a stadium. This was based on a story about the Coyotes and what had happened in Glendale and how this man was involved with that. How much of that story do you know, Moshe?
I know enough to know that you know, the stadium out in Glendale is, again, one of those cases of, it's in a nice part of Glendale and it's in the right part of Glendale, but it's just not in Phoenix. And it really didn't change the quality of the team. What it did was it made him a lot richer when he sold the team.
Well, and there's, you know, competing questions about motivation here and whether Anthony LeBlanc, I mean, he's clearly been involved in sports and entertainment for quite some time. And he's suggesting that there is very minimal risk to the city. There was an interview with CTV Steve Murphy last week, and he was asked point blank by Steve Murphy, Mr. LeBlanc, if there's no risk, why don't you just pay for it yourself? And
sure,
that answer, the answer from him was, well, one that, you know, didn't satisfy Steve very much.
Yeah, and it doesn't satisfy me very much. When you offer the city that they can retain ownership of the stadium on the surface, that sounds like the right thing to do. And on a certain level, it is the right thing to do. But that means that the only risk then that Schooners Entertainment takes on themselves is that as long as there is a team in Halifax, they will pay the maintenance and operating costs on the stadium. What it doesn't say is that if the team ever decides to fold, move, or cease operations, that stadium is now entirely the responsibility of the city, and there's no anchor tenant to pay any of the maintenance or operating costs. So the risk here of the city owning the stadium is that it falls entirely on the city to keep that stadium functional, operational, and full. And so at a later point, he can show up and say, you know what, I need another cash injection. I need another bit of help here. I need some discount on the maintenance and operating costs I promised. And that's where the city is exposed to a huge amount of risk.
Moshe Landers here. He's an economics professor at Concordia University here in Halifax at Dalhousie as well. The idea, though, that we could have a use for a stadium. In fact, a study done in 2010 said a community stadium makes sense and that there could be community uses up to 300 different nights or days a year. Can you think of an example where a municipality has taken on and decided it was going to build a stadium of its own?
Well, I mean, usually the stadiums are built by the cities because the sports franchises that use it usually hold them hostage and say, pay for it or we're going somewhere else. So in many cases, it is city-owned and city-financed. It's just, are you going to see a return on your investment? And if that money is going to come out of other spending priorities, then is the city prepared to sacrifice those priorities? That's where the issue is, and that's where it's always been. If Haligolians are prepared to stump up the cash for it and sacrifice healthcare, education, roads, infrastructure, whatever, because they feel that stadium in Shannon Park is going to be worth those sacrificed services, then hey, that's great. Just they need to know that they're not going to get a return on their investment, and that's where it becomes a little bit of a different exercise then.
You know, even with, you know, hundreds of people weighing in, there are still, you know, 23% who say, yeah, they'd love a stadium. And it's not clearly scientific, and it's not the majority. But some are worried. There has been an expression that if we don't this time, we may never get an opportunity again.
Right, and that's for sure. I don't think the CFL has come a knocking again. They already came a generation ago now, and there was a Schooners lined up then, and it failed. And I think if it fails now, the CFL is going to say, you know what, we're moving on. When I was out in Halifax last week and I was talking, I was challenging the people that were at my talk, and I was saying, you know, where does Halifax fit into the grand scheme of kind of the top table, second table of Canadian cities? And with no offense to Halifax, it's probably on the cusp of that second tier or third tier cities. First tier being Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal, Calgary, Edmonton, Ottawa kind of being at the second level. Where exactly is Halifax? Well, you know what? With a stadium that might kind of put them into that second tier, and without it, they could be relegated maybe to the third tier. So in that sense, the stadium might be worth it only for kind of the heft that it brings the city in national politics, national economics, and broader national issues.
With this conversation generating more conversation, suggestion, we could put it to a plebiscite. Ultimately, it'll be left up to Halifax Regional Council to decide. Can you think of an example? Do you know of an example where a community was asked for its opinion whether it should go ahead and I won't say give in, but sign on to a deal that may not be the best deal ever?
Yeah, so Calgary last year went through a very bruising plebiscite where it was put to the people for a new arena for the Saddle Dome for the Calgary Flames. And it really divided the city, and it really became political, and it really became nasty. In the end, it was about 55% against public funds being used. I'm sorry, I said for the arena, but it was actually as part of a broader bid for the Olympics. But the arena got tied up into it. It's not one of those things that you want to go down that path. City Council is there for a reason, and they're there to make these tough decisions. They don't need to put to a plebiscite something that the, you know, average Halifax citizen either doesn't understand the full economics of it, doesn't want to understand the full economics of it, or doesn't have the time to understand it. So that's why City Council is there. You represent the people, you make the decision, you don't put it to a plebiscite, because all that's going to do is just leave everybody very raw and sore when it's done.
Yeah, and I can't imagine, as much as it would be exciting, and it may maybe even put us, I won't say world class, but, you know, give us a higher standing within the, you know, on the grand scheme of the cities across this country, but to take these five options that are on the table, all of which involve risk for the taxpayer, you know, again, it sounds like this company is going to launch this, you know, this possibility of a outdoor hockey game, and who knows what else they may be offering. It just sounds like a little bit too little, a little bit too late.
Yeah, and you know, I'm starting to realize that I probably do owe you a beer now, because I don't know how much this is really going to go forward anymore. But you know, the fact is that don't forget that Anthony LeBlanc is a very, very rich man, and he's a very, very rich man for a reason. He doesn't make bad deals. And if he's offering something to the city that makes it look like it's in the city's favor and he's being selfless, I would really, really call that one into question. He's doing this because there's clearly something in it for Schooner Sports Entertainment. And that is that they're effectively going to get a heavily, heavily subsidized stadium at no real risk to them. And that's the thing that Halifax taxpayers need to recognize, that if you want the stadium, you can have it, but understand what's being put in front of you is not necessarily in your best interests. And that's not just the case in Halifax, that's the case with every stadium, and that's what I keep coming on to tell your listeners.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, does the CFL finance, do they finance franchises? He did mention, you know, we would be out of pocket millions of dollars a year because they are going to do some of the operations of the facility, and I assume pay for the team.
Right, and they should be out millions of dollars a year paying the operating costs for a stadium that they're using. So, in effect, they're really reducing it to they will be a tenant of the stadium. So, city, please build a stadium so that we can be your main tenant. What they're not offering the city is any guarantee beyond we will be your tenant today or we'll be your tenant for the next 3 to 5 years or 10 years. But at some point, if they decide to pull the plug, well, what does that do for the city then? So that's where the city is going to absorb all of that risk.
Well, Moshe, beer anytime, stadium or not. We'll look forward to our next chat. And you know, I'm not sure how much more bizarre the story can get, but we'll stay tuned and always appreciate having a few moments of your time. Have a safe flight this afternoon. Take care.
Thanks. And don't buy any hockey tickets for Heritage Classics yet. It's not happening.
Yeah, somebody else said, you know what? We could fly 40,000 Haligonians, buy tickets to an event somewhere else, and still not have the same financial risk.
Exactly. Very good.
Moshe Lander, take care. Concordia University economics professor, also works here in Halifax at Dalhousie from time to time, from class to class. Lieutenant Colonel Eleanor Taylor is our guest. I got this news release earlier in the week. We were able to connect, make this happen. The Royal Canadian Regiment Trust wants to raise $100,000 for the Afghanistan War Memorial. We'll tell you all about that after this news update.